Good morning! This is Pat Capone from Mr. Capone's Bootlegger Band, and you are listening to Too Much Scrolling. Rock on, brothers and sisters, rock on. I'll see you in the future.
Good morning! Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for June 4th, 2019. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Opera Man. Oh,
jeez. We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. If you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. Let me guess, you are not making a reference to the fact that... Adam Sandler was the host of Saturday Night Live a couple weeks ago, and he did his Opera Man bit.
No, not at all. But I do know Adam Sandler is Opera Man.
You know that?
God. He's Opera Man, Steve.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, I look forward to this show. This is going to be wonderful. This is going to be fantastic.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. You got a chance to see the new Disney movie, Aladdin.
I did get to see Aladdin.
It's strange to say it's a new Disney movie, isn't it?
It is a strange one to say that it's new. Of course, it seems like that all of the films that were at one time animated are becoming live action films. And this one stars Will Smith, Steve.
Yes.
The Fresh Prince himself.
He's the genie.
He is the genie.
Okay.
And I was prepared to be more critical of this, but mm-hmm. he did a great job. And this is a good film.
Okay, so going into this, we had a full-on argument online between us and the CF3 pod because they made fun of me for saying that I looked forward to seeing this movie. And for probably good reason, the trailer for this really looked like this was going to be a bad movie. But
that is true. The trailer did this movie very little service.
But actually going to see it, you actually enjoyed it, and Will Smith held his own as the genie.
Yeah, this is not a great film.
Okay.
Okay, but this is, I mean, it's like going to a Broadway film that Disney puts together.
All right.
I mean, I'm sorry, a Broadway show that Disney would put together. It is very, very capable, very, very skilled. It's made for general audiences. There's very few films that you could go, hey, grandma's going to go and my five-year-old's going to go to this film along with everyone in between, and we can all go see this. This is certainly very much a Disney film.
I was about to say, isn't that Disney's goal? Isn't that what Disney does, is finds a way to get all of the general audience, everybody coming? You know, like the return of Mary Poppins really tried to hit that note.
Sure.
And I think it missed in a lot of ways.
Well, I was more critical of it when I first saw it.
Mm-hmm.
I've listened to the soundtrack enough that I've said, yeah, that's pretty, it's fine, it's okay. Fine. And I'm okay with it.
So Aladdin.
But Aladdin certainly is, you know, a lot of the songs. These are Howard Ashman's last songs before he passed away mm-hmm. from AIDS. And Ashman is the one who, Little Mermaid, and also Beauty and the Beast,
right.
Which is probably the finest, in my opinion, of the Disney musical films, the rebirth of Disney. He also did Little Shop of Horrors, if you didn't know that.
Okay.
But Ashman had started working on this, and he passed away. And so we get this. There's a new song. There's a new storyline to it. We're dealing with Jasmine. She wants to be Sultan. And what's so odd about Disney stories is we deal with kings,
mm-hmm.
and we deal with... you know, hereditary
royalty.
Lines, and
yeah.
And I'm just the whole time we're going, you know, we are Americans, right? We elect people to be our leaders, and they are not kings, and that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But this is, I mean, it is what it is, and don't overthink it. You go into it, the colors are just gorgeous. They pop off the screen. The costumes are gorgeous. The actors do a great job. The music is good. I mean, by the time you get to the whole new world where they're flying with mm-hmm. the carpet, you know, you're all on board. You're going through. You got, you know, there's dust in the eye. I mean, in the whole theater. I mean, everybody's crying. This is a Disney Broadway show that is made for everyone. And I think that we underestimate the skill of that. I will suggest that when you see A Whole New World, that you think of Epcot's Soarin' Ride, because I couldn't help but thinking this must be the same, you know, whoever is doing that ride. Uh-huh. Soarin's ride is you get on this seat and they lift you up in your front of an IMAX screen. And then they take you on a journey through the air. Think of like a magic carpet ride or airplane, however you want to describe it, over a bunch of stuff, and you dip down and you fly up. And it's certainly, it's all an illusion in your brain. And looking at this, going, I kept thinking, wow, this is Soarin', but, you know, on a movie theater.
So you speculate, therefore, that maybe the Soarin' ride at Epcot might be rebranded with this magic carpet ride for a little while.
It could be. It could be. Because if you go on YouTube, you can find the previous Soarin' ride. And the deal is, when I didn't mention the Soarin'. If you go over an orange field where they're growing oranges, they're going to spray orange mist in the air so you smell it. They're going to drizzle water on you when you go over a waterfall or something of that nature. It's a little bit more immersive, and this is very much, it could be very immersive.
Okay.
When you watch it, you go, wow, that is kind of fun. I did get to see it also on AMC's, was it Atmos? It's their sound system, where the sound system actually is in the seats.
Yeah.
And that was really, I mean, it's just wonderful. And the blacks are extra black. And I mean, it was a beautiful presentation.
Nice.
And I recommend this, especially, you know, think about the holidays. Everybody's tired. You know, everybody needs to kind of settle down maybe, and you're going to watch something. You finished playing games and being with everyone. We need a little bit of quiet time, but you need something that's going to meet multiple generations. Their needs. And this is the type of film that definitely could do that. And it's fun and it's happy. And what can you say?
There you go.
Just enough scary parts to it. I would say, you know, 55 out of 100. You know, not great, but certainly not bad.
Okay. Your scale just baffles me sometimes. You sounded like you were so positive, and then you gave this a failing score. 55 out of 100 is not a passing grade.
Well, you know, 50 would be, you would say, is the median, the average, maybe, the median of those.
Okay.
Not median, average.
Okay.
So this is better than average.
Better than average.
But it certainly isn't, this isn't one for the ages or anything like that.
Okay.
You're going to it like you go see an Android Lloyd Webber show. You know, is it the greatest? Okay, probably not. But do you have a good time? You have a good time.
There you go.
It's Joseph. He's singing about his multicolored jacket.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not bad. It's just not, you know, one for the ages. How do you say that?
All right, very good. I think that you like this more than you expected to, and I think that you recommend it, and we'll leave it at that.
Yeah, and Will Smith did a wonderful job. Good job.
I love Will Smith, and he can do no wrong except for that one Netflix movie that was just so bad. Oh, my God.
And a lot of it is charm.
I got a chance to see a really interesting presentation on ABC last week. It was called Live in Front of a Studio Audience. What they did was they did one of those live TV presentations that they've been doing the last few years.
And this is not a rebroadcast. This is a playing of a actual show, right?
Two shows.
Two shows.
They took the script from the 1975 episode of All in the Family, where the Jeffersons were moving out of the neighborhood and moving on up to the East Side, and then they played the pilot script for the Jeffersons back to back.
Now they recast these actors also.
This was an all-star cast playing these parts, and boy, did they do a great job with the opening songs. Remember when TV shows had opening theme songs?
Yeah, they sell advertising now, Steve.
They sell advertising instead, and I think we've missed something. I think we've lost something with that. I've been talking about this for a while. The theme songs of all those classic TV shows, here they performed live. It was Woody Harrelson and Marissa Tomei performing the All in the Family theme.
Oh, I thought that was Woody from Cheers, Steve.
It is Woody from Cheers.
He's
an older gentleman now, but yes.
Oh, he is?
Yes, he
is. He's not Coach, though.
He did such a great job. And then Jennifer Hudson sang the rousing theme to the Jeffersons live, walking through the set. It was a fantastic presentation.
With backup singers.
With backup singers in one part of the set. It was beautiful. This was a really great experience watching these TV shows from 1975 redone today in 2019.
Okay, so what's really important for our young listeners who are not familiar with these shows, and we are familiar with them because we watched them with our grandparents.
Yeah, right.
That's right. So All in the Family was the story of what we would say is a blue-collar family, mm-hmm. Who certainly we would think more traditional. I don't know if you really consider it conservative, but just more traditional family values.
Yep.
And then, you know, we had their daughter and soon-to-be husband, Meathead, which we know as the gentleman who directed Spinal Tap, Steve.
That's right, Rob Reiner.
That's right. So they were the ultra-liberal, mm-hmm. sort of pushing the envelopes. If we told this story today, you know, you would think maybe you would use baby boomers, like grandparents, maybe talking to Gen Z or millennials.
Maybe.
Where it's just there's a difference in how they basically look at society. It's just there was times were changing it during that time. And Norman Lear, who was our director, he was our writer, right?
Mm-hmm.
He explored those changes that were going on.
And so well. This is so well put together. Norman Lear was still there. He's still alive. He was there to open this presentation with Jimmy Kimmel and to explain, yes, this is from 1975, but the issues that were raised then are still issues that we're dealing with today. The idea of equality, the idea of looking at people and not worrying about the color of their skin or their gender and how we can live together in harmony. This worked really well in 2019.
And the Jeffersons was important,
mm-hmm.
because it, for the most part, it was an all-black family,
right?
Who was a successful family. He ran dry cleaners.
Series of dry cleaners, okay. Including one that was in the building with them.
And mm-hmm. they also had a maid service.
Right.
We were introduced to the English guy living next door.
Right.
And the interracial couple that lived upstairs.
Uh-huh.
And so we had this wonderful cast. And what we learned a little bit is Mr. Jefferson certainly had some different ways of looking at the world,
yep.
and he was the guy being challenged.
Right.
This was a very different show than Good Times,
mm-hmm.
Which was exploring things from a black family's standpoint in Chicago.
Right.
But, you know, just maybe this was a poor family, and the Jeffersons were that middle class that we all, you know,
that family that made it, that family that struggled in their youth, mm-hmm. and then made it on their own, found a way, that entrepreneurial spirit, that American spirit, and then were maybe looked down upon the people who hadn't made it yet.
Well, I don't know if they looked down upon them.
It's part of the script.
It
yeah.
is.
Yeah.
Well, what I will say is that it certainly was. Maybe, I mean, this was different for kids, and we were kids during right. this time. It was just television. But for the generation who was our grandparents,
mm-hmm.
you know, this was a big change. We had a leading black family. This was a Leave It to Beaver type of moment.
Yep.
But with a family with a different color. We don't think about that today.
Nope.
I mean, well, Blackish or something like that comes on and, you know, it's like maybe it's something special, but it's just another show.
It's just another show that just happens to have an African-American cast. I agree with you.
But during that time, that was, you know, a huge change.
Yeah.
That was a huge change. And how interesting that for us, it was just another television show that we liked.
I agree with you. I didn't remember the anti-Semitic and anti-race issues that were in All in the Family. I knew that they were there, but boy, listening to those words in this live episode, I was like, wow, these were big words that they were saying.
And imagine being Carol, the actor who had to play mm-hmm. that.
Yeah.
Because I guess I knew there were actors, but I didn't. Archie Bunker was Archie Bunker.
That's right.
And, you know, he was saying things that a lot of people were thinking at during that time. And that's part of what art does, is to take You're the jester, you're the clown, mm-hmm. and you are to be the fool because you articulate what everyone else cannot say.
Right.
And you're basically putting a mirror to the to society, and you're asking yourself, is this appropriate? Is this the right way of dealing with things?
Yeah.
And the beauty is you have the kids asking the questions, basically putting everything front and center. Mm-hmm. And maybe this is how society grows.
Suffice it to say, I highly recommend that you go to abc.com, you find this live presentation. It was so good that they replayed it on the Saturday after they had played it live on Wednesday. This is a very good presentation, and it brings up all of these issues in a very easy to understand way that the next generation of sitcoms is certainly going to engage the audience with these issues. This is a great place to start. The history of television is on display here. I also got a chance to see Catch 22. This is the Hulu series that is from the original book.
This stars Batman, Steve.
There is a Batman in here.
A nipply Batman.
George Clooney is in this one. Not nearly as much as I expected him to be.
No.
He is a pretty strong character in the pieces that he's in the scenes where George Clooney is featured. Boy, is he the best actor on screen. But there's also Hugh Laurie, who I had no idea was a part of this production, who is a wonderful character in this one. If you don't remember, the story of Catch-22 is the story of World War II pilots who are going through the hell that is war and trying desperately to find a way to get out of their military engagement here.
They keep changing the rules, Steve.
And the rules keep changing, and it's frustrating, and it's violent, and there's death, and there's a little bit of comedy mixed in. This is not MASH, but it's very similar in its tone to that MASH moment where there's this terrible, awful war happening, and then the flip side of that is the life that these soldiers are living juxtaposed with that terror.
So with both of these I guess series that you've watched, the retelling of a couple of sitcoms and Catch-22, Steve, all we need is Hogan's Heroes
yeah.
to come back and somebody to say that that's a reasonable story.
Well, you watched the remake of Aladdin, so we're all just watching old stuff this week. It's old stuff week on Too Much Scrolling. Maybe next week we'll get something more modern.
So the pitch will be it'll be at like a prisoner of war camp, Steve.
Time for that. Time for that. Stacey Shaw, our correspondent from the UK, also got a chance to see a movie. She saw We Have Always Lived in the Castle.
This is on video on demand and in cinemas in America at the moment. It's a film adaptation of Shirley Jackson's final and, in my opinion, best novel. A gothic mystery where there's a family who are holding themselves together by the thinnest of threads, and everything is turned completely on its head with the arrival of Cousin Charles, played by Sebastian Stan. It could be really hard to make a film that's essentially four characters in a room talking, because that can be tricky to make compelling, but here they've managed to do so because the characters feel fully fleshed out, there's an undercurrent in each of them, and they're played by four fantastic actors, especially Crispin Glover as the tormented, tragic, yet very, very determined Uncle Julian. There's a Wes Anderson-style pastel look to the visuals, which is kind of fun in comparison to the dark and bleak story that you're watching. It's a sadly still timely tale of otherness and the cruelty of pack mentality in the general public that makes for uncomfortable viewing at times because some things haven't changed. It's a strange and thought-provoking film with characters that feel really well made and a strong story that's full of quiet unease and sometimes a foreboding sense of menace that there's something worse to come. I really like this creepy tale, and I'll probably be watching it again very soon.
Thank you, Stacey. If you want to find more information from Stacey, you can go to her website, specialfeatureswithstaceyshaw.wordpress.com, or you can find her on Twitter and Instagram under Films with Stacey. Thanks again, Stacey. Opening this week, maybe there's some new movies that we'll see instead of the old stuff that we
Steve,
saw.
Steve, what will you be doing in Phoenix?
Sweating.
Sweating?
A lot.
But hopefully Phoenix still survives, Steve.
It is
because,
going to be so hot.
Because the person who owns the North, the Starks, will be starring in a movie.
Ah,
as Jean Grey.
Aha! The movie Dark Phoenix is finally opening in theaters this week. This is the X-Men story that we've read in comic book form for, what, has it been 20 years since they told this story?
Maybe this is twice. It's been more than that. Probably the mid-80s, maybe late 70s.
Wow.
So the Dark Phoenix, this is one of those stories that all of a sudden we learn some revelations come on. Uh-huh. It looks like Professor X wasn't as good as we think he is going to be. And of course, we have the power from within. Jean Grey turns into the Phoenix.
That is so 80s. I have 80s music going through my head right now. The power within. All right, good. So Dark Phoenix, I have looked forward to this movie. I have dreaded this movie. I don't know if this is going to be a good X-Men movie or not, but I will go see it.
This has got a great cast. Mm-hmm. They certainly have a voice in this series. What's going to be interesting is now that Disney owns Fox, these characters can be, although it's not, they can be adopted and brought into the MCU. The question is how they're going to do that.
Right.
We're going to find out. Maybe there is a scene at the end. You never know.
I really don't know about that. We'll have to go and pay our money to find out on that one. Are you excited for Dark Phoenix?
I am.
I am. I'm excited for this one, even though it might not be any good. There is a sequel coming out this week. It is called The Secret Life of Pets 2, the sequel to the cartoon from, what, 2 years ago, about how pets have a life when you leave the apartment, and they have a whole nother story that happens.
Well, I was wondering what happened to the mouse in Ratatouille, Steve, and looks like he's starving.
Well, he's got more work now. He's playing a dog in this one. He's playing the lead character, Max. That's Patton Oswalt from Mystery Science Theater 3000. Thank you very much.
Oh, I thought it was the rat from Ratatouille, Steve.
No, it's TV son of TV's Frank.
Oh. Well, there you go, Steve.
So I do look forward to hearing about this one. I don't know that I'm actually going to go to the movies to see this one, but I'm sure many of my students will enjoy it. There is a movie coming out called Late Night. This is a story of a late night talk show host who is not a very nice person, and she's really good at saying "you're fired" to her employees.
Why is Nanny McPhee not being a good person, Steve?
Nanny McPhee, Emma Thompson here, plays the lead character, the late night talk show wars. Remember when the late night talk show wars were happening?
When you need her most, Steve.
Emma Thompson will be there. Mindy Kaling is the...
I was wondering what happened to her. She obviously moved on from Scranton, Pennsylvania, but... Now she's a writer, Steve.
Now she's the writer on this show. And John Lithgow is in there somewhere, too.
Oh, okay.
Well, come on. You're not going to give me a Planet of the Apes reference on this one?
Oh, yes. He's a lot of fun.
Third Rock from the Sun, something.
Of course.
Oh, my goodness. There is a documentary coming out about Luciano Pavarotti. And this looks like a really good documentary about a magnificent singer.
I think this was opened up at the Catalina Wine Mixer, Steve, didn't it?
No, this is not Will Ferrell. This is not Boats Step Brothers.
Boats and Hoes.
That's all you know about Pavarotti, isn't it?
Oh, it's the Catalina Wine Mixer, Steve.
This is a documentary directed by Ron Howard and featuring Spike Lee, Princess Diana, Phil Donahue, and Stevie Wonder. I look forward to... this man certainly is a figure of what we've done with music for a while.
Is that called opera, Steve?
Yes. He's an opera singer.
Is he really?
Yes. Like opera man.
Like opera man. This actually looks pretty good. I look forward to seeing this.
I do too. There is a sci-fi feature on Netflix this week called I Am Mother. This is the story of a teenage girl raised by a kindly robot who may or may not be lying to her for her entire life.
Well, there you go, Steve. This actually looks really good. Uh-huh. This is on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And I look forward to seeing this one.
Rose Byrne and Hilary Swank are featured in that one. I will definitely go see that science fiction movie. The other science fiction movie that I will definitely be seeing this week is the Riff Trax Star Raiders that's finally hitting theaters on Thursday.
Steve, this movie looks absolutely awful.
It is.
And that's the reason why people are going to make fun of it while you watch it.
Riff Tracks, our national riffing troupe, is going to be there for us and give us...
our national riffing troupe, that's right.
As opposed to our local.
That's right. Down in front.
That's right. This is Riff Tracks. This was filmed a few months ago live, and it's going to be in your local theater. Go to fathomevents.com and find more information. And yes, you should go watch Star Raiders on Thursday. There is a documentary coming out called Cleaning Up the Town, Remembering Ghostbusters.
Well, there you go, Steve.
I look forward to getting some way to see this at some point in my life. It features all of the interviews with all of the stars and the writers of Ghostbusters.
And this has Harold Ramis in it.
Harold Ramis is in there.
Before he passed away.
This was filmed in 2010, so Harold Ramis's footage is in there. They got to interview him as well for this.
I wonder if this is a slow build towards the new Ghostbusters film that will be coming out.
I believe it is. This is debuting at the 35th anniversary celebration of Ghostbusters, which is happening next week. It's called Ghostbusters Fan Fest, and it's taking place on the Sony lot. So only 2,000 people can pay for tickets to go see this, and to rub elbows with all of those people and the next generation. Ivan Reitman's son, who's directing the new Ghostbusters movie, is going to be there. So yes, I believe this is the ramp up to that new movie.
Will they have a large marshmallow man there, Steve?
I have no idea what they're going to have there, and I'm not going to find out because I'm not flying to California for this event, but I do want to see this documentary at some point.
Book it. Book it.
Brings us to our book of the week. You know, Chip, I read a lot. Have I mentioned that I read a lot, Chip?
Literacy is important, Steve, and the summer is here.
Have I mentioned that I read a lot of science fiction?
Steve, you, it seems like science fiction is what you read.
Yeah, it pretty much is. So you can't even imagine how excited I was when I found out that a good friend of mine has published his fourth book.
What?
Yes. This is Mike Ledico, and his fourth book is called Portals. Everybody, welcome Mike to Geek Pride Day. Good to see you, man.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Welcome in. So, I know how excited you are about this book. I hope you know how excited I am about this book. Tell us about your fourth book. What's this Portals all about?
Basically, what I did was about 5 or 6 years ago, I got this idea in my head to just go all out with my imagination, and just because I had a couple books online already, and you know, I was able to get them published for free, but this was a huge idea. I just came up with it. I said, I'm going to tap my whole imagination for this one, and came up with the idea that this teenager was in high school in the future, and he was getting bullied, and there was a seminar on wormholes, and he went to the seminar that was provided by this college professor down in the basement of the school, and these bullies followed him, and they pushed him into the wormhole, and he just went on this wild ride across the universe, encountering all kinds of places and beings and aliens and situations. And it's kind of like The Wizard of Oz meets Aliens or any other kind of science fiction movie that you've ever seen.
Sure.
And his main goal was to try to get home.
Okay.
So just came up with this, and just, you know, being a 60s, born in the 60s baby, I was raised on all the Universal monsters and dragons and all kinds of science fiction stuff. I watched Star Trek a lot, and just got all these ideas about, you know, going this guy going through the universe and encountering all these places. So
let's talk about who our reader is for this. Is this a young adult book?
Yeah, it's more geared towards middle school and high school students.
Sure.
When I did my first novel, I kind of made that one more adults, and then this one I made, you know, geared towards that age, and just kind of going with it because I'm a school teacher. Maybe,
sure.
You know, like gearing it towards that age to get more exposure.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically what I, you know, how I came up with the idea.
And so you used a bullied child. So bullying is very much a trigger to right now. It's a focus on what we what we're trying to tell our young people not to do to others, along with the rest of humanity.
Right.
So tell me, why was that important for this character?
Well, because he was a lonely child, mm-hmm. and he was in a school where there are a lot of kids that were more wealthy than him.
Okay.
And he basically, when he got bullied, he was just like, "Yeah, mom, dad, don't do anything about it because you can't do anything about it," kind of thing.
Okay.
And it kind of ties into the storyline as far as like where it goes off into these different places, and there's some situation where there may or may not be bullies, either directly or indirectly, and I added a lot of twists in some of the places he went, and then I added a big twist at the end.
Okay. So. And you used a wormhole to get our Luke Skywalker, our main character, to his locations to go through his adventure.
Yeah.
Why? Where did that come from?
If you ever, I would say between Star Trek, the original series, and The City on the Edge of Forever,
mm-hmm.
that episode, or, Austin Powers.
There you go.
Of course.
An Austin Powers reference.
There's a little humor in the book. Not much, but I did pull some humor in it because, I think that's important. But
mm-hmm.
Just in a lot of science fiction movies that I've seen where, they went to different places with, wormhole mm-hmm. capabilities. But most of it was geared from Star Trek because I was raised on Star Trek.
Did you ever watch Sliders?
Sliders, too.
Sliders,
yeah,
Multiple Sliders. Universe Theory.
Yeah,
did you
that
ever,
was another one.
Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Did you catch
that?
I haven't
seen that one yet.
You should watch that, my friend. That's a good movie.
I got it on my watch list right
it's
now.
It's a good movie.
Yeah.
So our young person who's read this, what are you hoping that they leave this book understanding some of the things?
In my introduction, I just say this book is dedicated to those who stand up to bullies or pushy people. So, that respect, and then also that there's so many possibilities out there in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
I want him to get that from it too, and be open-minded, because living on Earth and getting into our lifestyle, sometimes we don't know what's truly out there, and we get into our own little worlds that we forget about our world, and we forget about the worlds that might be out there that are possibilities. Being a science teacher, I've done a lot of research on this kind of stuff, and I remember when I was 20 years ago, it was the question of if there was life out there.
Mm-hmm.
Now the question is, where is the life out there, and what kind of life is it, based on a lot of the science research that's going on these days. So.
Well, in Mars, they were just finding, they said there's a tremendous amount of water that's being found. That was just in the news this week.
Well, I can't remember if it was like 10 or 15 years ago, there was a few microbes that were found on Earth from Mars that there must have been some kind of meteor impact mm-hmm. or some other kind of disaster on Mars that blew the microbes all the way to Earth.
Isn't that amazing?
And so, I just kind of gear it on any kind of research that mm-hmm. I did, and just kind of because a lot of the star systems in his book are
sure.
real. I mean, I pulled them from.
Okay,
that's my favorite part about the book is you are using real science in here. You are talking about measurements. You're talking about how the distance from one place to another can be measured. You put, like quiz questions. I'm ready to make the quiz for the kids from this book. Our students are ready for some of this information.
Yeah, the thing about my curriculum these days is I teach astronomy, but it's not enough.
That's a great way to put it.
It's not enough. We only do certain aspects of it, and then we're supposed to move on. And one of my favorite parts of astronomy is teaching about stars and star systems and the different, just the various kinds of stars and star systems that are out there that we should be aware of.
Okay.
And that's one of the things that I'm getting a little nudge in there. I got into this book big time.
In fact, it's the summertime, and reading this story hopefully sparks someone to go out and do a little more research. That's why we have libraries.
Yeah. Well, the thing about this that surprises me is that it came out faster than I thought it would, and that's why I don't teach math anymore. But I did. They told me
estimation.
When they told me I got my free books in the mail that it was going to be 8 weeks. It was going to be published 8 weeks. So I did the tally of 8 weeks, and I came up with May 31st, and it's actually online already.
Yeah. Is it?
Yeah, you can go to our Amazon store, amazon.toomuchscrolling.com.
Amazon, it's on. It's on Barnes & Noble's. It's on Thrift Books and Powell Books websites. So, and I don't know how many others they're on, but those four main ones I know it's on already. So
I'm going to go back to something you mentioned earlier about our main character, and about sort of he was being bullied for like where he's standing. And I just wanted to make a statement that we live in magical times. And in fact, what young people may not recognize is historically they have so much available to them that it's kind of hard when you feel maybe someone else has some thing that you don't, to really recognize that you have everything that's available to you to be whoever you want to be. If you have an interest, it's really a special time to sort of explore that interest.
I wasn't really, I mean, I looked at that a little bit, but I wasn't really, I was just, when I wrote this, I was just going off the top of my head as far as my imagination.
Sure.
And yeah, I mean, there are definitely some real, real indications of my personality in here as far as.
Really?
So your students can get to know you.
The thing that I pointed out here a couple times when he's like at home and he's watching, like, you know, this was in 2016, he's watching retro movies about like Abbott and Costello and, you know, werewolf movies and stuff like that. And you know, so that, I mean, you know, that's it.
There's no shaky speech.
That's in all my books.
That's pretty much all you do is watch old movies like me, right?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. That's it.
That's it.
But, I've already got some students that have bought it.
Wonderful.
It's on their reading list this summer. And I just said, go ahead, enjoy it. Tell me what you think of it. I want as much, you know, he's critiqued it already.
Yeah.
I got a couple other teachers that bought it for them and their kids. I said,
and you still have self-esteem. So that's good.
Yeah, I said, critique it as much as you want, because this is my first one and I want to know everything, because
now,
I want to try to get my second one out.
Sure.
Maybe before I retire.
When you say this is your first one, this is your fourth book that you've written, but this is the first one that's been published on this level.
Right.
You were self-publishing before.
Right.
What's the difference between self-publishing and what you're going through with this process on this?
That's a good question. My whole writing process is way different.
Yeah.
I mean, okay. I didn't have anybody when I published by myself online, and I had those other four books published. It was just me.
Okay.
Nobody looked at it. Nobody critiqued it. Nothing. And this way, I mean, it's a lot of hard work.
Do you have an editor?
The self ones. I was the editor.
Sure.
This one, you know, I just did this one the right way.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That way. I mean, it's just that's just a fact. I just did this in the right way, and when it was finally done, I started it the process in August, and I redid. I had to edit it time and time again, three or four times, before they put it on copy pages, and then I had to do that a couple times too.
Mm-hmm.
And it took about, probably about 7 months for the whole thing.
So if a person was interested in writing a book, what advice would you give them as far as the process of getting started?
I would tap your imagination, and I would start writing ideas down first, and then, like my next one that I'm doing is kind of like Twilight Zone, kind of Star Trek type of thing. I've got it written down on paper, but I haven't gotten anything typed online or on my computer yet. It's just kind of, you know, I would say to any of my students, anybody that, I would say just start writing your ideas down first, and then I would start just going right into the computer and just start, typing chapter one, chapter two, chapter three. It's not coming overnight. It took me.
It's a process.
It is. It's a big process.
It's a huge process.
And it's a lot better these days in this day and age with the computer, because it
lets you save everything, and then you can go back and revamp anything that you might want to do that you didn't like in the first place when you where you ended, and then you can continue. And surprisingly enough, this only took me 6 months to do on the computer because I had all the ideas in my head already. And
it's a good place to keep them in your head. So, better than in your elbow. Yeah. I have a lot of ideas in my elbow that aren't going anywhere.
Or my fingernail, or you know, sharing it with other people. So.
Well, this is amazing. Congratulations on getting this book out. This book is called Portals, and you can find it on our Amazon store, right?
Amazon.TooMuchScrolling.com. Mike, thank you so much for coming
in.
Thank you
for having me.
Congratulations on the book.
Thank you.
I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
I think we can. Again, I'm going to Phoenix, so I can't guarantee anything, but I will be slightly thinner because I will have sweated off so much.
Well, you never know. Phoenix may, you may not be coming back from Phoenix, Steve.
It's the
we don't
dark
know
Phoenix.
That. That's right. The Dark Phoenix.
I get it. It's funny. So, hopefully we'll be back next week and we'll have so much more to talk about. If you need more information, give us a call or text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. You can always ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank our guests, Mike Ledico, talking about his new book, Portals, and Stacey Shaw for her report on her movie viewing for the week. I hope that you had a great week too. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Opera Man.
We'll see you in the future.